Good morning. It's Wednesday, April 24th. The war in the Middle East is now 201 days old. I'm Jonathan Schanzer, Senior Vice President for Research at Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Welcome back to the FDD Morning Brief. The war headlines are changing rapidly, but right now the biggest story seems to be the insanity on university campuses in New York and across the country. The anti-Semitic rhetoric in America is heating up, and it is said to be a response to Israel's war in Gaza. After endeavoring to stay away from this topic for months, it seems that we have no choice but to tackle it here at the FDD Morning Brief. So our guest this morning is Jacob Bain. He runs a great organization called Israel on Campus Coalition, or ICC. He has his fingers on the pulse of the campus craziness, and he'll talk to us about what he's tracking live right here on the FDD Morning Brief in just a few short minutes. But before we speak to Jacob, let's take a look at some of the other items making news today. The IDF is reportedly making progress on a tent encampment in the central Gaza town of Khan Yunis. They have to move roughly 1.4 million displaced persons out of the southern Gaza town of Rafah before what is probably the last major battle with Hamas. Moving displaced Gazans is the moral and ethical thing to do, but it's also key for Israel to complete its campaign against Hamas with international legitimacy. During my recent travels, I observed a major effort to supplement this effort. I'm talking about the aid that will be shipped from Gaza to Gaza from Cyprus. The Cypriots have an impressive operation with the help of the U.S., Israel, and the UAE to screen aid and then rapidly send it to the war zone. Cyprus is a tiny country. It rarely makes headlines, but the government in Nicosia deserves credit here. And you know who else deserves credit? The Israelis. They haven't fought a war this long since their War of Independence in 1948. They are not accustomed to the norms of long wars, including the provision of aid, even if it means helping those that aim to do them harm. It's a steep learning curve, folks, and Israel gets little credit for climbing it. But the IDF now knows what it needs to do: facilitate assistance to Gaza, win the war, and then prepare to fight on other fronts. By the way, if war in Lebanon erupts, look for Cyprus to provide aid there too. They're gearing up to do so right now. And if you ask me, they'll probably be there sooner than most people think. Now for your headlines. Headline one, the Senate approved that $95 billion aid package for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. Kudos to Congress. You won't hear me say that very often, but they deserve credit for getting this one past the goal line. As we've long said at FDD, there are three embattled democracies, and each are deserving of American support. Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan are fighting for survival, and I, for one, feel good about making sure that they get what they need to defend themselves. And let's not forget about who is waging war against them. The revisionist powers of Russia, China, and Iran are looking to overturn the U.S.-led world order. These beleaguered democracies are on the front lines of this battle, so we need them to win. And it's good to see bipartisanship prevail here with so much on the line. Headline two, Hezbollah continues to test Israel's patience with ongoing rocket and drone fire. Remember, the Lebanese terrorist group fired dozens of rockets at Israel on the night of April 13th when Iran attacked. Hezbollah then fired 35 rockets into Israel on the first night of Passover, just as the holiday was setting in. And yesterday, a handful of drones penetrated deep into Israeli territory, sending Israelis scrambling to their shelters in places like Nahariya and Haifa. This morning, the Israelis have been firing back, hammering scores of Hezbollah assets in southern Lebanon and beyond. But allow me to just make a culturally sensitive or, I don't know, insensitive observation here. The Israelis were warned repeatedly by the United States, the Europeans, and Arab states alike that it had no choice but to hold fire during the entire holy month of Ramadan if the war was not to spread across the entire Middle East. Did any of those countries warn Iran or Hezbollah not to attack Israel during the holy week of Passover? Lest we forget the 10/7 massacre that was carried out on the Jewish holiday of Simchat Torah. This double standard is hard to ignore. And headline three, after multiple detailed and documented examples of ties between the UN Relief and Works Agency and Hamas, the UN has completed its review of UNRWA and, surprise, they found no evidence of wrongdoing. There are just some tiny tweaks that they recommend. Just so we're clear, The organization's employees held some of the hostages after 10/7. There was a massive server farm found under the UNRWA headquarters in Gaza City. Hamas fighters regularly fire rockets from within UNRWA compounds. Weapons have been found repeatedly in their facilities, and schools teach vile hatred of Israelis in these UNRWA facilities. But, you know, it's all good, right? I know you're going to find this shocking, but the United Nations is an anti-Semitic cesspool at its corrupt. A serious overhaul is needed. The international body that America created after World War II to keep the peace is clearly not working, but yet it's working overtime to punish countries like Israel for the crime of defending itself while exonerating those who partner with Iran-backed terror groups. Orwell would be proud. And speaking of Orwellian, it's time to talk about the rot in our institutions of higher learning. That's why we've corralled Jacob Boehm from the Israel on Campus Coalition, or ICC, to join us. You probably want to take a deep breath here before you hear this, folks. The topics we're about to cover are not going to be pretty. Welcome, Jacob Boehm.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
All right. Well, let's start and easily. Tell us a little bit about your organization. What does ICC and what are you doing now during a time of acute crisis on America's college campuses?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me. And look, we're facing some very grave threats in the United States from anti-Israel activists who are seeking to completely end American support for Israel. And they are doing it through political campaigns. They are doing it through digital campaigns. They are doing it through information warfare. And they are investing very, very, very heavily in tools and tactics to achieve that objective. And one of the domains that they have focused most on over the past decade or so is our college campuses, is targeting the next generation. So ICC, the Israel on Campus Coalition, we know how to counter those efforts. We've got the agility, the adaptability, and this whole political infrastructure that we've built out to rapidly respond to campus emergencies and crises. And if AIPAC and if FDD are in the halls of Congress, ICC and our partners are the ones stepping up in the political fight on campus. And so we're stepping up in all these fires that you're seeing on campus on the news. We run a 24/7 national operations center at a location in our nation's capital. We're monitoring this stuff 24/7. And no matter what emerges, we're able to come in and leverage those political tools, digital tools, and organizing tools to support Jewish and pro-Israel students who are under siege. And also, very importantly, to work to undermine the frankly professional anti-Israel organizers who are behind everything that we're seeing on campus. So that's what ICC is focused on.
So just to follow up here, what does it mean when you go to counter these? I mean, does it mean that you're rallying pro-Israel students to shout down the pro-Hamas students that are, you know, raising hell on campus? I mean, what's a physical response? I mean, I certainly see a lot of your tweets and kind of digital activism. What does it mean in the physical world?
Our adversaries are sending to the campuses organizing experts, coalition building specialists, digital trainers for the anti-Israel students, lawyers. And so we're doing all of the same and making sure that the pro-Israel students, the Jewish students, their friends, their allies can benefit from that same level of professional support. So that's what we've been focused on over the past few years.
Got it. All right. Well, let's move to the headlines now. Tell us what's going on at Columbia University. I mean, this seems like it's ground zero for campus jihadism.
Well, in many ways, it really is. And I think they've chosen to make it ground zero. And what we're seeing at this very moment is this dramatic standoff between anti-Israel protesters who have occupied this lawn on campus and a university administration that is basically afraid of them. They have taken this space on campus and made it a no-go zone for Jews, made it a no-go zone for the friends and allies of Jews, anyone who doesn't agree with the radical agenda of these people who are frankly glorifying violence. And I think that's what we're really talking about here, that we've got to be really clear about. A lot of people who are associated with the protests are trying to make this out to be something about free speech. And we are not talking about free speech. We're talking about free hate. When people call for the murder or for the genocide of an entire people, we need to take that seriously. That's what we think at ICC. Words matter. And so the question now is what is Manoush Shafiq, the president of Colombia, going to do? She has said a lot, but is she actually going to take action to ensure that the Jewish and pro-Israel students feel safe and welcome on their own campus?
I think it's notable, by the way, that the city of New York has had to get into the act here because the university's not done enough. But let me ask you, I mean, how much do the professors have to do with this? I mean, at Columbia, you've got Rashid Khalidi, a guy that I've tracked for a long time, a former PLO spokesman who's going around essentially glorifying what's happening in the battles between Israel and Hamas. You've got Joseph Massad, who may be the most radical professor in the United States when it comes to the Middle East. Are these people playing a role on campus? And I think maybe just more broadly, do other professors play a role at other schools? Are they a big part of the problem?
Absolutely. And you've actually seen faculty across the country start to organize themselves recently into Faculty for Justice in Palestine chapters, right? As sort of like an adjunct to the Students for Justice in Palestine chapters on campus. So the faculty are absolutely essential. And they're essential for a couple of reasons. Number one, I mean, it's sort of the whole purpose of the academy, right? And if you remember your time in college, you remember how influential the faculty was over the students. So they have a real impact on, you know, are students going to buy into this propaganda that Qatar and Iran are pushing out through social media or not? But number two, they've got staying power, right? The undergraduates come and go every 4 years. The faculty stay. So as these problems have grown, anti-Israel faculty have played this absolutely critical role in mentoring the anti-Israel students and also in advancing this movement. So it's absolutely critical. I will mention, by the way, that there are some growing efforts on our side. One of the partner organizations ICC works really closely with is the Academic Engagement Network. So they are organizing faculty to fight back. And you know, one of the hardest parts about the faculty domain, I think, is that I've noticed this sort of asymmetry between anti-Israel faculty, being more willing to use the pulpit of their classroom to advance political agenda than the pro-Israel or more sympathetic or more reasonable faculty have been willing to. So that's just an interesting note.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll also just note here that, you know, Middle Eastern studies departments have become entirely hostile to I don't even want to say pro-Israel narratives. I mean, they're hostile to Israel, right? The idea that Israel would be included in Middle Eastern studies courses and lectures in a way that's even remotely positive, that's, you know, I think we're seeing less and less of it. And in fact, what we're watching instead is the ghettoization of Israel studies. So in other words, if you're a pro-Israel student who wants to study the Middle East, well, you've got to take classes in the Israel Studies Department, which would be separate and distinct from the Middle Eastern Studies Departments. And then guess what? When you graduate from your school and you have a degree in Israel Studies, are you going to be accepted into the State Department? Probably not. Probably you would not stand the same chance as someone who studied the Middle East writ large. So we're watching.
And many of the Israel studies professors and many, many visiting professors from Israel across the country are now being protested as part of this new campaign, this new pro-Hamas wave.
Right. Well, all right. But my next question, and this I think is the big one, right, is how coordinated is all of this? We're obviously aware of Students for Justice in Palestine, SJP, but there's also Jewish Voices for Peace, JVP, Within Our Lifetime, WOL, and there are other groups involved in campuses across the country. Do they talk? Do they share resources?
Absolutely.
What do we know about how these guys network?
Well, we know quite a lot about it. And yeah, it is the biggest myth about what is happening on our college campuses is that this protest campaign is somehow organic and that it's somehow bottom up and that it's somehow grassroots. Nothing could be further from the truth. The starting point is the leader of the anti-Israel campaign in America, a group called AMP, American Muslims for Palestine. They were formed in Chicago today. They're in Falls Church, Virginia, near where I am right now. And they are essentially the umbrella organization. They are the professional political driver of the anti-Israel campaign in the United States. And what's very interesting about it is that the National Students for Justice in Palestine organization, the lead problem on campus, right, literally exists within the same corporation as American Muslims for Palestine. So it's not only that they're talking to each other across geography, in WhatsApp chats all day long, et cetera, which they are, it's that they are literally coordinating across domains. What our adversaries are waging is this multi-domain information war against us. And they're sharing resources, tools, strategies across various domains, right? So that's why the deputy mayor of the NYPD said, the deputy commissioner of the NYPD said, you know, something that we had raised previously, which is, why are all the tents the same? Why do all the tents at Columbia, why are they all the identical green? You know, either there was a fire sale at REI or this is coordinated.
Yeah. And by the way, you mentioned AMP, you know, the founder or one of the founders and the chairman, it's a guy named Hatem Bazian. Hatem Bazian was the man who created the first SJP chapter in the late 1990s or early 2000s on the campus of Berkeley. Not a coincidence, right?
Okay. Not at all.
No, not at all. If you had to guess where this thing goes next, where does it go? Our administration's going to get a handle on this? Municipal and state governments, the federal government, it seems like there are multiple efforts to try to get things under control. Is anything working right now?
Well, the first thing I would say is thank you to law enforcement. Thank you to the NYPD and the police in New Haven and Yale that have had to deal with some just awful violence from these pro-Hamas protesters. So that's what I would say, number one. There's going to be a continued need for law enforcement. But the second thing that I would say is that, you know, there are laws against what we're seeing, and there are rules against hate and against bigoted comments and against glorification of violence and calling for violence against ethnic groups or religious groups or racial groups. Those rules already exist on every single one of these campuses. They exist at Columbia, they exist at Yale, they exist at Princeton. And university leaders have been willing to apply them in the past. They're just not applying them here. It's a double standard. It's a discriminatory double standard. And then there's also the fact that we're not just talking about speech. We're not really just talking about speech in many of these places. We're talking about intimidation. We're talking about threats. We're talking about blocking entrances, blocking exits, shoving flags in the eyes of pro-Israel students. So we are going to need to see some serious action from every level of leadership, starting with the university presidents. You know, the NYPD has said, we're ready to go in, President Shafiq, call us in to help. We're standing by. We're also certainly going to need leadership from governors and local municipal leadership, like the leadership Mayor Adams is prepared to provide.
Last question for you, real quick. I know you talk to students all the time. What's the best thing that parents or grandparents or any of us can do right now to support these students? I know they didn't sign up for this. This is not what they wanted when they went off to school.
Well, look, I think my message is stay strong. You know, as difficult as this moment is, we need to remember that our cause is just, our cause is right. This is the greatest liberation movement in the history of humanity. We are on the side of freedom, democracy, human rights, not on the side of gender apartheid, totalitarianism, murderous homophobia, and everything that our adversaries are actually fighting for, whether everyone on campus realizes it or not. So let's remember that we're on the right side of history here.
All right, we're going to leave it there. Thank you, Jacob Boehm, for joining us today on the FDD Morning Brief.
Thanks for having me.
Here's what FDD has on tap for you today. The team at FDD Center on Military and Political Power is looking into the announcement yesterday by the Pentagon spokesman that Iran-backed militias conducted two unsuccessful attacks on U.S. forces in Iraq and Syria, the first attacks since February. The team has a live visual up on FDD's site showing the wildly disproportionate number of attacks by Iran on U.S. forces compared to a limited number of U.S. responses against them. FDD senior advisor Rich Goldberg has a new piece in the City Journal highlighting how anti-Semitism isn't just a problem on college campuses. It's a growing problem in America's K through 12 schools. In typical FDD fashion, Rich doesn't just admire the problem. He offers specific tools that governors, state legislators, and the Department of Education could wield right now to start fighting back, should they choose to. And finally, my colleagues from FDD's Israel and Turkey programs are tracking the Turkish flotilla threatening to set sail to Gaza. I actually saw an item today where the leader of Code Pink has shown up in Istanbul, of all people. If you remember what happened last time, the Turks sent a flotilla, that was 2010, and then you know that there was real concern now about provoking a military confrontation with Israel. FDD experts are working to make sure that insurance companies, reinsurance companies, and other financial stakeholders are aware of the risks involved with this Hamas-backing initiative. That's it for today, folks. Read our expert analysis on our website, fdd.org. Read our quick takes on X at FDD and support our work with a tax-deductible donation, as always, at fdd.org/invest. Tune in Friday for another episode of the FDD Morning Brief. We'll have Congressman Brian Mast on the program. I've enjoyed watching him these last several months, particularly the way he swats away pro-Hamas protesters with his quick wit. So we'll see you then, I hope. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Jonathan Shanzer, signing off for FDD.